Hello, ladies and gentlemen. How y'all doing today? My day was pretty good, I guess. This is the Scott Jacobs Show, and we're going to cover the story on Harvey Weinstein's previous ex-girlfriend that helped him set up some of these rapes and molestations and stuff like that with those women. So here's the story on that from Fox News. This is from Fox News.
Emily, I'm going to go to you first, former federal prosecutor. Who are these other men, and can they keep her safe?
I'll answer your second question first. I hope that the government keeps her safe. I hope that for the same reasons that I hope they protect all inmates.
It seems like, guys.
I think that it is obvious she is a wealth of knowledge and information for this international underage sex scheme that occurred for years and years. And if I may point a couple
funded
things out to about
Clintons.
Her case that is different
Remember
than
Epstein's.
That. First of all, the fact that she does have all of that information, or undoubtedly does not erase her own culpability. And the fact that she played an incredibly insidious and active part of recruiting and grooming and abusing these girls. And in my opinion, an even more insidious role, because it was she that lent that reassuring presence to them, that normalized sexual behavior so that when it came time for the abuse, the girls felt safe with her around there and had been normalized that to that type of what
Are
ultimately became toxic
me?
And incredibly violent behavior. The three incidents alleged in the indictment by the government against her
and
took
the
place in the 90s,
get away
by the way,
with this shit,
and
guys.
Epstein's took place in 2002 through 2005. And the difference is that in the Federal Sex Trafficking Act, when it involves minors,
if
there's no statute
Harvey
of limitations.
You can
meaning
do
that
anything.
Clearly, the incidents that the government is prosecuting here and charging, that there is ironclad evidence in their eyes of minors' acts and activities in the conspiracy and whatnot, and especially, of course, her 2016 perjury counts. And I think that's a really big deal here because it means that they wouldn't bring it without that type of leverage they feel they have. And final point, much has been made about, oh no, what if she gets a plea deal because of this volume of information that she can put forth? But
I mean,
plea deals do not, they are convictions. So I think that we should reserve a type of apprehension about that. The 99.7% conviction rate the federal government has is mostly due to those plea agreements. And so certainly, what if they offer that to her, any type of charge she would accept conviction for would be 100% grotesque, because that's what her charges are.
Yeah, she would have to confess. Brian Yenis did an exclusive interview with a 14-year-old. Well, she's not 14 now, but at 14 years old, she was assaulted. And she talks
that's
about
crazy,
how she was gang
guys.
Raped.
I mean,
14 and they tried to intimidate her after she got pregnant. I mean, what are they going to do here?
I hate
exactly.
doing stories like
they did
this.
Is
it
they
bites
pointed
my
she
blood.
Is just as bad as Epstein, according to this young girl who's now a young lady now. And she wants to see... she wants to see justice paid, to send a message and to also help her healing, because when you have that type of experience as a teen, logic tells you it's going to be very tough having a normal life. I have a couple of things that Geraldo's uniquely equipped to answer. Why would somebody with so many options choose to come back to New Hampshire knowing that she's facing life in prison or worse? Why wouldn't she stay in a place that we couldn't even get her out of anyway? Like
it's
Prince Andrew is cowering in the corner of some palace. And she decides to come back as if she really thinks she needs to hide in New Hampshire. She could hide anywhere. What do you think's going on here?
Well, I think that the fact that she was still in the United States indicates that maybe our view of the strength of the case against her is wrong. I mean, I would have used her staying in the country were I her attorney to argue that she was not a flight risk, that she could be... given bail or house arrest until her case was heard. Why she decided to stay, and when you buy a 156-acre spread in New Hampshire, a relatively sparsely populated state, it's not exactly a subtle move. She used GMAX as her address, her initials in essence. So there's more going on there. You know, I detest what Epstein purportedly did.
I mean, what's
going to
happen next, guys?
Allegedly
do you know?
Did in aiding and abetting the abuse of these children. But what I see as the real lesson of this this morality tale is the toxic impact of money. Why did Bill Clinton want to hang around with Jeffrey Epstein? Why did Prince Andrew want to hide hide out in Epstein's apartment, which happens to be the largest private residence in Manhattan? What about all of these others, Harvard University and all of these prestigious institutions? Why did they court him even after he was busted in the state case?
Let me get Kennedy. Kennedy, why is it that the rich, powerful, and well-connected play by different rules? I mean, I think the answer to the question why she was in New Hampshire is she thought she was going to get away with it.
Yeah, she thought she was going to live free, but she's going to die in prison, as she should. This is not someone who's just helping out or codependent with Jeffrey Epstein. She's accused of sexually molesting children. And shame on her and everyone else who has protected her. Shame on Alex Azar for giving Jeffrey Epstein the deal he did as a U.S. attorney in Florida. If you watch the Netflix series Filthy Rich about Epstein, it will make your stomach turn. It will make you absolutely sick. You don't have to be a parent of girls. I happen to have two girls, and it made me so incredibly angry. Not only at Epstein, who's waiting in hell for her, but also Ghislaine Maxwell, who abused these children herself and knowingly for years and years extended this cycle and essentially ruined their lives. And I hope the victims have their real day in court and they get to look her in the eye. And their testimony is the nail in her coffin.
Amen to that. I hope they get every single person. I don't care what political party they're associated with, because these are nasty people.
Very nasty people, guys. You know? I don't know what I would do if that was my daughter. I'd probably flip the fuck out and go ape shit on people, you know? But thank God that I ain't went through that. This was on Hannibal last night. So let's hear this. This is a commercial. Skip it.
This special edition of Hannity, Law and Order in America. I'm Jason Chaffetz in tonight for Sean. As liberal cities across America struggle to maintain order, President Trump is vowing to protect the American dream for all citizens at all costs. Watch this.
We're a nation committed to equal abundant opportunity for citizens of every race, color, religion, and creed. The American dream is the sacred birthright of every American child. That's what we have, is we have the American dream. And nobody's going to shatter the American dream, not the anarchists, not the agitators, not the fools, not the looters. They're not going to have any impact on the national dream like no other. That's why we're here today, to ensure that every citizen can achieve their dream, achieve their destiny, and realize their full and extraordinary potential.
Sadly, local law enforcement is now becoming a federal issue. Too often, liberal mayors and governors fail their constituents. We see it in New York, as Bill de Blasio's soft-on-crime policies have led to a major increase in violence. And we see it in Los Angeles, where the police budget has been slashed, in part because of the demands from protesters like these. Watch this.
Los Angeles is the home of the most murderous law enforcement officers in the country. So it's important, as we say things like, I see your sign, Donald Trump. Yeah, Donald Trump.
Whoa.
That we remember that we live in a city that is largely liberal white supremacists.
So who will you call when they defund and dismantle police? We already know what happens in police-free zones: murder, rape, robbery, assault. We saw this play out in the CHOP zone in Seattle, where two teenagers were killed. Now, last night on this show, Sean Hannity was able to talk to the father of one of those victims, and he spoke out. Watch this.
when I went to the hospital, there was no detectives there. There was nobody there, no media there. There was nothing. He was nobody. He was just like, we was just there, and we just sat there, and I said, man, why are we sitting here? There's nobody else here. It's like they didn't care. It didn't matter. I haven't heard from the mayor. I haven't heard from the police department. I haven't from no city and nobody.
All I know is my son he got killed up there, and he's just a 19-year-old. No, that's Horace Lorenzo Anderson. That's my son, you know, and I love him.
It's a powerful interview. Mr. Anderson has now spoken to President Trump, and the mayor of Seattle also finally reached out. But what happened in Mayor Durkin's city was totally unacceptable. It was a tragedy. It was a failure of leadership. And all must be held accountable. Joining us now is Fox News contributor Dan Bongino, New York Congressman Lee Zeldin, and Los Angeles County Sheriff Alex Villanueva. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining here tonight. Dan, I want to start with you. You've been in law enforcement. You saw that interview. And what happened in Seattle, it didn't have to happen. This was a choice that some of the leaders in the state of Washington made, and they made a deadly decision.
Listen, that interview was devastating. Yeah, there's not a sane person anywhere in America who watched that and didn't grab a Kleenex and put it near their eye. Right. That interview was devastating to watch. And as I said last night, and I'll repeat again, anyone who's worn the uniform, including the officer here with us that I'm sure can attest to this, if you've ever sat across the line from police tape at a murder scene where there's a young man or young woman, sadly, who's lost their life, every single parent comes up and says the exact same thing. They say, that's my baby, that's my son, or that's my daughter, before they collapse. Listen to me, Jason. People are dying because of decisions made by radical leftists to put people in power who are subsequently making decisions that are getting people killed. Killed, not figuratively killed, literally killed. We can lose fights about taxes. We can lose fights about regulations. We can lose those and fight another day. If you are killed or someone in your family is killed, there is no tomorrow. That tomorrow and all of your tomorrows are gone. This is an absolute disgrace. These are American citizens. They deserve better than this crap that's been shoved down their throat.
Now, Congressman Zeldin, you're out. You represent part of Long Island, but in New York City, a short drive from where you are, you have one of the worst mayors in the country, in Bill de Blasio. It used to be a place that was family-friendly, it was business-friendly, but not anymore.
Yeah, very recently, too. And we've seen over the course of the last few months this deterioration going on in New York City where all sorts of crime rates are going up. Remember, this year started with the implementation of cashless bail. You could rob a bank in New York City, be detained, be released that same day, look up at the sky with a big smile on your face, you can't believe that you're already free, then go out and rob another bank. And by the way, that's not some hypothetical that actually happened. Fast forward to now, where you have the mayor signing off on this movement to defund the police and New York City council members signing off on this movement. The average person who lives in New York City wants safety and security. They want law and order. They want their city to be free and to prosper and to have opportunity. They want their kids to be able to grow there. And people who live in the area want to be able to go visit and enjoy the city. And everything is going in the wrong direction. The mayor needs to resign. And this city, similarly to when David Dinkins left and Rudy Giuliani came in the early 90s, you need someone else to come in and respect our cops, respect our law and order, and to give the city an opportunity to flourish once again.
Now, I'm thrilled that we have the Los Angeles County Sheriff. Sheriff, I really do appreciate you being able to join us tonight. You're on the receiving end of the Los Angeles County Supervisor slashing your budget some $145 million. You have this supervisor, Catherine Barker, who has the 76. Nerve to say that she loves law enforcement. What's she supports law enforcement. You go to her website, and she's talking about the kids of Los Angeles County. But based on what she and the other supervisors have done, they have slashed your budget. What is going to happen in Los Angeles County?
Well, the $145 million, that was just the last shot that they took at law enforcement, public safety. They already cut $400 million from our budget. It cost $3.9 billion to run the department. They gave us $3.5 billion. And then by the way, now is $3.3 billion. So the number keeps dropping.
$3.3 billion.
However, to provide public safety continues to rise. Crime isn't gone away because people don't like law enforcement.
To me, that's a lot of money to law.
And one thing they cannot bring to their mouth, they cannot even mouth the word victim of crime. No one is listening to victims of crime or law-abiding citizens. For some reason, all of a sudden that's unpopular to speak up on behalf of victims, but I will. I'm going to support the hardworking men and women who are part of the community. We're not some outside occupying force. We didn't wake up one day and all of a sudden we're racist and we're not part of the community. We are part of the community, working with the community, for the community, and we need to be present.
I think I'm going to be racist today, guys.
Now, Sheriff, what are you going to have to cut? I mean, you're going to have to cut. If you're cutting out hundreds of millions of dollars, what are you going to have to sacrifice?
Well, the Board of Supervisors, through the CEO, they recommended cutting Special Victim Bureau, our Narcotics Bureau, our Major Crimes Bureau that does organized crime, the human trafficking, all these different entities. At the minimum, we're going to have to curtail them, which means cases are not going to be investigated or we're going to pile on to other people. They're going to have a bigger, bigger workload, which means the bad guys are still going to be out there victimizing other people. Our fraud and cybercrime unit, they investigate fiduciary elderly abuse. And that is a huge growing crime sector. However, they don't want to provide the funds to address that. So there is no easy cuts. It's going to hurt the public in some way, no matter how we slice or dice.
Now, Dan, the Democrats don't speak out against this. They go out and they say they want to cut ICE. They want to defund the police. I don't see Joe Biden pushing back on this. And I see the AOCs of the world saying, you know what, we haven't gone far enough.
Yeah, Jason, the swamp Democrats gave up on America a long time ago. Listen, I'm really sorry. That may hurt a lot of you out there in the country to hear. I'm not talking about the voting Democrats. There are a lot of good people out there who disagree with me, but they vote Democrat, but they still love the country. That's not the people up on Capitol Hill. They don't give a damn about our national security. They don't give a damn about your personal security or city security either. The defund the police movement, which again, I'll be fair, which the Democrats aren't as. Joe Biden said he's not for this. I'm not sure I take him at his word at this point, but he said it, so to be fair. But AOC and the radical wing doesn't care. And as the sheriff just said, can you imagine all these special victim units? Jason, do you know the experience, as the sheriff can attest to, that'll be lost? All these special victim units, these officers for years who've been studying patterns of child abuse, now gone and wiped out? All gone because the Democrats thought this was a good idea.
Crazy. Congressman Zeldin, I'll give you the last word. I've just got about 20 seconds.
This is a warning shot. You see what's happening in New York City or what's happening in the state capitol in New York or in Chicago or Baltimore or Atlanta or in California and L.A. This is what one-party rule is going to look like in Washington if we allow the Democrats to run the table this November. That we're battling for the soul of our country, for our freedoms, our liberties, our flag, everything that makes our country great, to be the best version of ourselves. As a nation, we can't take anything for granted. Losing isn't an option. We have to get out and vote. Take it as a warning shot of what our country would look like in January if we don't fight hard for it right now.
Dan, Sheriff Villanueva, and Congressman Zeldin, thank you so much for joining us here this Thursday night. We do appreciate it. So thank you.
So what did you think about that, guys? World news is crazy nowadays, bro. This is.
When we see Pleiadian shapes, we see a sphere of light. Because this is the Merc.
The waters rise, the banks are breached. Men and women are swept away as a great flood of biblical proportions inundates everything. The deluge comes without warning.
By the way, we're doing a piece on the Mastrodamus.
Or does it? A painting? A sketch? A poem? These are clues that may promise total annihilation. Thousands of years, prophets around the world have predicted the end of days. More than one suggests the apocalypse is fast approaching. We call this theoretical convergence between doomsday. prophecies and today's events. The Nostradamus effect. Precious resource.
It is covered by water, guys. We can't live without it.
But Leonardo da Vinci, master painter, scientist, and engineer, was obsessed with it.
He could see that at the end of the day, if nature decided to do something big, we could do nothing about it. It's not surprising that one would hope for an end of days, a last time, something where good would defeat bad.
New evidence suggests that Leonardo foretold of an enormous deluge that will flood the world and destroy mankind. His warnings may be hidden in codes and symbols that secretly permeate his masterpieces. Investigate the belief by some that today's increasingly violent hurricanes, tornadoes, and earthquakes are signs that coincide with his warnings of a coming global catastrophe. We will neither refute nor endorse these theories, merely present the evidence. Leonardo's belief in the awesome power of the natural world, especially water, influenced his engineering feats, fueled his intellectual pursuits, and colored his art. Some believe it may have also triggered apocalyptic prophecies. Circa 1482, Leonardo wrote,
"Rafts and other contrivances, on which were jumbled men, women, and children, terrified by the fury of the winds, which rolled the waters over, under, and around the corpses of the drowned."
Words are very powerful, they're very vivid. They are a warning.
There's no doubt that Leonardo had an apocalyptic frame of mind, and he wasn't alone in that. At the time he was painting, there were widespread fears of an apocalyptic event about to occur, to the point where people expected some kind of vast deluge.
Those who follow Leonardo suggest there is a symbolic code in his works. Was this master painter a forerunner to his fellow prophet, Michel de Nostradamus? Was Leonardo secretly warning future generations of their fate?
I think he always felt himself to be in the process of discovery, had not reached any clear conclusions about things, and so was hesitant to perhaps talk about these things to others.
Clues to Leonardo's cryptic visions may be found by examining more closely the dark era in which he lived in Italy. During Leonardo's age, the 15th and 16th centuries, belief in horrific images of the world's end, as described in the Book of Revelation, had intensified throughout Western Europe.
Leonardo, in the years either side of 1500, is living in one of the most extraordinary times in European history. Enormous turbulence.
Europe was emerging from the Dark Ages into the light of exploration and discovery. And the all-powerful Catholic Church was just beginning to feel the first inklings of the Protestant Reformation that would split Christianity in the West. These tumultuous times surely affected and influenced Leonardo, where even the power of nature presented a formidable threat and danger. Florence, Italy, 1466. A young Leonardo da Vinci witnesses a massive flood of the Arno River.
Massive flood.
Did he possibly see crops washed away? Buildings destroyed.
No result.
Bloated bodies floating in the waters.
He predicted Noah's Ark. Pretty much.
Fascinated by this idea of what water can do. A normally passive river suddenly rises up over its banks and floods the city, causing destruction.
Leonardo would develop a lifelong fascination with water. Researchers conclude that the Arno flooding may have been the cause. The raw nature may have also taught Leonardo about the dynamics of water erosion and flow velocity. In the years to follow, he searched for clues to harness the immense power of water, and at the same time documented his fear of its destructive force. Some interpreters of Leonardo's work suspect these little-known passages in his private journals are warnings of environmental catastrophe for our time.
All the waters dashing on their shores seem to be battling them with the blows of drowned bodies.
Did Leonardo see in nature's terrible, unrelenting power a clue to man's destiny? Did he foresee the modern world destroyed by a flood? Much like the biblical flood that wiped away the sins of mankind in the book of Genesis.
I will send rain upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights, and every living thing that I have made, I will blot out from the face of the ground.
This vivid prophecy from the Old Testament is echoed across time and in other cultures. The Epic of Gilgamesh from Babylon also refers to an apocalyptic deluge that destroys mankind.
Ain't that kind of ironic, guys? How
a
different
mythic
religions
Chinese emperor
are kind
founded
of
the
same.
First dynasty only after he was able to divert floodwaters that reached to the heavens. Hopi tradition speaks of a devastating torrent that wipes out a corrupt people. Interpreters of prophecy suggest that all of these floods mirror environmental catastrophe taking place around the world today. The only question, then and now, is how much time do they believe we have to heed the warning?
Who knows? Only our God knows.
Leonardo's most famous creations, including The Last Supper and the Mona Lisa, each filled with intricate complexity and symbolism, suggest he knew and hid the answer.
Damn.
Think about Leonardo, and you step into his work as an artist. You're stepping into a very problematic world with every Leonardo painting, everything that he does. It's
that Leonardo da Vinci was a smart man.
Leonardo appears to use symbolic images in his paintings to communicate multiple ideas.
Several times he did that.
There are some drawings where the people's hair seems to be like a storm. Just extraordinary vortex of turbulent curls. It becomes a kind of trait of Leonardo.
We don't really know what Leonardo's reason was for including that kind of detail. And I suppose this keeps art historians, at the very least, busy.
Was Leonardo leaving statements that foretell the exact manner in which the world will end? Wiped out by rising sea levels and geologic upheaval? He wrote,
"Seawater will rise above the high peaks of mountains towards the sky and will fall down again onto the dwellings of men."
Leonardo called these writings his riddles. Today, many call them his prophecies.
Creepy.
What might Leonardo's prophecies reveal? And why did he go to great lengths to disguise so many of his beliefs in his work?
Okay. That's the end of our show. But next week, or next time I'm on here, I'm going to do a part two to this and let it continue on and see how far I can get us through it. You know what I mean? So, I hope everybody enjoyed my show today. We went through a few topics. I want to put a shout out to Austin, my boss. He had a baby today. So, I want to congratulate him and I want my listeners to help me pray that everything is the way they wanted it to be. So, that's the Scott Jacobs Show. Thank you for watching. And thank you, podcast listeners, that's putting out my show. Thanks all the sponsors I got. Thanks, Anchor, for the great app you have. So, talk later.